Suzanne Stern of NTIA.
Welcome, Suzanne.
Good morning, Suzanne.
Thank you. Good morning.
Niklas Lagergren joining.
Hello, Niklas.
Hello.
Hello. Who's that just joined?
It's quite late in Australia, as Bruce is now.
It's just after 10 p.m. here in Australia.
Bruce, there have been...
Australia.
Bruce, there are apologies from Tony Holmes, who gives his proxy to Tony Harris or Greg. Apologies from Lucy Nichols, who gives a proxy to Nicholas. Apologies from Amadeo and Alec Wilson. And Demi Getchko may be late.
And you had a transfer of proxy from Amadeo?
Amadeo gives his proxy, yes, to Alec Wilson and Demi. But since Alec Wilson won't be on the call, Demi will hold all the proxies.
Oh. Hello, Philip, just joined the call.
Hello, Philip.
Hi. Greg is joining.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Greg. Bruce, yes, Amadeo has given his proxy to you.
Yeah, I saw it. Hello, it's Jordan Buchanan.
Hi, Jordan. Has Ross joined the call?
Yes, I know, Glenn. Is Jeff Newman available to join, do you know? As chair of the task, one of the task force.
Yeah, he's not available, I know. He's he's at a doctor's appointment.
Yes.
Okay.
Have you got the note that he sent you, Bruce?
I'm not sure.
Shall I resend it to you?
Yes, please. I think we've probably got enough to get started. Let me just run through the list of people and just see who we've got on. So, Philip Shepherd.
Yes.
Marilyn Kane.
Yes.
Grant Forsyth.
Yep.
Ken Stubbs.
Yes.
Kerry Karp.
Yep.
Phil Colbert.
Yep.
Tony Harris. Tony Holmes has apologies. Greg Ruth?
Yes.
Okay. Jessica Wu?
Yes.
Welcome, Jessica. Carlos Alfonso? Okay, Mark Schneiders.
Yes.
Okay, Mark. Nicholas Lagergren.
I'm here.
Welcome. Kiyoshi Tsuru. Okay, and Lucy Nichols has given apologies, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
And Amadeo has given apologies. Demi Getschko.
Demi will be late.
Okay, and Alec Wilson's also given apologies again. Then from the registrars, is Ross Rader there? No. Tom Keller?
I'm here.
Uncle Tom? Okay, we have quorum. I guess the first item of the agenda is referring to the minutes of the last meeting. So, Glenn, where are we up to in terms of approving minutes? I guess we're probably about one meeting behind, aren't we?
So we're one meeting behind, so we should be approving the minutes of the 1st of April, and the revised minutes of the 6th of May went out at my time, 12 minutes past noon.
Okay, what I suggest we do then is vote to approve the minutes of the 1st of April. Thanks, Ken. Do we have a seconder for that?
Philip.
Thank you, Philip. All those in favour of approving the minutes of the 1st of April say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, I'll move the minutes of the 1st of April passed. With respect to the minutes of the last meeting, I have since updated those to sort of incorporate, in regards to the discussion on the GNSO staff support, following the meeting, there was some clarification from Kurt Pritz, and also further clarification from Paul Verhoef. I've basically just simplified that section of the minutes, and that's included in a revised section, and I'll leave the members of council to read that, and we can approve those in the next meeting. But on the specific topic of GNSO staff support, if I could just ask Paul Verhoef to give an update on that topic.
Yes, Bruce. I'll be pleased to do that. The situation is the following. As per the agreement with the council, we are moving to publish the staff manager position shortly. In addition, we have foreseen additional support for the GNSO. We do this as part of a number of jobs we intend to publish on the overall policy development support side. So there would be, number one, a publication of the staff manager position, and number two, a position which I would expect largely to support the GNSO as well, although that position is possibly also going to be used for a number of support activities under other supporting organizations and committees. And then we have a third position, which is dedicated mostly to support CCNSO and ASO-related work. Our endeavor is that this would internally be completed over the next days or week or so, so that we are in a position to start a recruitment process at that point, with the aim that these people would be basically waiting in the wings until the moment that the new budget is approved. We can then offer them the contracts, and they can start as soon as possible. So that is that is the current that's the current state of play.
Okay, so just clarifying that, Paul. In the general policy area, there's a total of 5 positions that right. So there's yourself, there's Glenn as GNSO Secretariat, there's an ICANN staff manager, a GNSO policy person, partially shared with the CCNSO, and a CCNSO ASO policy person. Is that correct?
Let me see if I'm saying the same thing here.
Yep.
At the moment, there is Glenn as secretariat for you,
yep.
And there is Barbara, and there is myself.
Right.
That's it.
Yep.
We will publish basically 2 additional positions. One is support for ASO and CCNSO
yep.
combined in one post, and the
yep.
other post is additional support mostly to the GNSO. In
right.
addition, we will publish the post which is currently held by Barbara. As you know, she is on a consulting contract. We would want to draw that into a staff position, so we will, for that purpose, publish that position.
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead. Marilyn? You
I have a question, Paul. It's Marilyn. What is the difference between the 2 positions that... Well, I guess let me start with my question about the CCNSO and the ASO. As I understood, the CCNSO themselves, they were deciding in consultation then with ICANN on what support they wanted directly from ICANN. Is this position is part of that discussion, or is this separate?
No, the CCNSO is still to decide on exactly what support they're going to need. So the ASO as well, but you will understand from our side, we're going to need somebody who is follows what is going on in those areas and gives them a hand with whatever they decide they might, after all, ask us to get a hand for. The CCNSO, from what I know, has already decided that they would not want secretariat assistance in the short term. They haven't decided on further staff support. But obviously for us, in order to follow what goes on in those areas, we are going to need to put staff on that and follow the discussions and see what relevance those issues have for maybe more complex issues which go across a number of the supporting organizations, and to make sure that the whole thing is properly coordinated and the various cross relationships are established. So for the moment, that particular position is not going to be put up as a staff support position, but as a policy analyst position.
And that's helpful and interesting. I would say that policy analyst skills are different than managing complex political relationships. That's interesting to hear the perspective. My question then is, could you help us with the difference or perhaps the similarity between the other 2 positions, the staff manager position and the second position that you're describing as being primarily GNSO but also shared?
Well, I think that is something which we would like to particularly discuss with you, in particular with Bruce, I would think, as chair of the council. Our assessment also, I think, in talking to a number of you, is that the GNSO could probably do with some more support. And obviously, how exactly we're going to modulate that and what exact roles the 2 positions will take on remains to be determined in its detail. I mean, it could be that, and I'm just know, saying something aloud here without having a particular reason for it, but I can imagine, for example, that one position would be more directly in support of ongoing council PDP-related issues, whereas the other would follow more specific task forces on specific items where it is needed to do some additional background research and help the task forces, whichever they may be, go forward. I mean, that would, for example, be an option. There are obviously more options open here, but the ongoing work in the GNSO is such, and also with further PDPs being in the wings, that our assessment is that the overall sort of level of support is probably something which the GNSO requires.
Yeah, I think, Paul, I guess to some degree it would depend on who responded to the for the, you know, putting in for the positions effectively, because to some degree it sounds like those two positions aren't clearly separated, and it would depend on who was actually appointed to those positions and what their skills were as to how you'd use that resource at that time, would be my guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one has to remember that this is a broader issue which we have on staffing at the moment. As the organization grows, you know, we are now having to do a certain task with a certain amount of people. As the staff is growing, there need to be other configurations on all of the staff, basically on what their exact work areas of responsibility are. So particularly now that on the policy development support we are still staffing up, we're going to need people who can handle a whole broad variety of issues and have a broader discipline. Once we would move a step forward, and there is need for a more targeted sort of expertise and background, one could consider that. So we're having to build some of these considerations in the recruitment process, and then indeed, as you say, we need to see what exactly candidates come forward and what sort of complementarity we can find between the skill sets which are presented to us. So it's a rather complex way of going forward, but I guess that is part of an organization which is still growing and positioning itself and along the way finding out what all the expertise is, what is going to be required.
So it sounds to me, Paul, that if you advertised for those two positions, you'd probably have the position description may well be the same for those two positions.
Yeah, I would expect those...
Depending on who responds, I mean, you may have a senior and a junior role, and that would depend a little bit on the candidates that you have.
Well, absolutely, that may well be that. It could be two people working next to each other. It could be somebody a bit more senior and somebody a bit more junior. That depends quite a lot on the sort of candidacies we are going to get.
And so would you be, in your advertising for those positions, would you provide a salary range, or how would you kind of handle that part of the recruitment?
Oh, that is something I still need to finalise with court.
Right.
Bruce, I have one more question that I'd like to make, and really in response to something that was said, and that is that I really think that it is important for us to provide a process for the ICANN staff to have broader input than just centralizing all consultation on the chair of council. In fairness, both the workload for the chair of council and realizing that the chair is an elected position and of course over time changes, and the entirety of council needs to buy into structural decisions.
Yeah, so what I would suggest as a process would be that if Kurt could provide his draft position descriptions I can provide those to individual members of council that wish to review those. And I'm not quite sure the best way of doing that. I mean, if council members want to let me know if they want to be involved in that consultation process, I can either forward them on or give the list of names to Paul, and we can he can send out the list and get feedback, because I think it is appropriate that there's certainly, from my point of view, I don't want to be the single point of contact, because I'm often away or I'm, I get tied up with other work tasks for several days at a time, so I can't be always responding.
That is fine by me, Bruce. We can certainly do that. Let me come back to Marilyn's remarks in a more broader sense. Obviously, yes. I mean, we would like to see the staff interact with as broad a group as possible or necessary. I do want to be careful though with some of the work that the staff are presenting, in that I think it is important that if it happens to be for either the chair of the council or for the chair of a group or a task force, that in particular those chairs carry with them the approval of what the staff is doing for the whole of that group, so that the staff doesn't work in a vacuum, so to speak. Particularly at times where there are rather diverging positions on certain issues among the GNSO participants, obviously the staff will try to work, let me say, the middle ground and be just to the positions presented by the various constituents, etc., etc. But I think at any time, given the rather broad variety from time to time and the board differences, it is important that whatever the staff considers as the sort of middle ground is determined in cooperation and in full harmony with the leadership of the GNSO, in order to avoid that there is a view that the staff goes off and it's on its own tangent, so to speak.
Paul, it's Marilyn again. You know, I think one of the productive discussions that could take place is around the issue of role of staff. Is staff function to provide process and procedure support, or is staff function to define and perceive a consensus and an outcome and to, and you know, I think that most of us in the GNSO would probably perceive that latter function, would probably perceive the former function, process, procedure, knowledge about the rules of ICANN in terms of the bylaws, being knowledgeable about the content of the archives on a subject, and facilitating the work of volunteers as opposed to you know, leading. Obviously, staff from time to time may need to, but I think we've seen the this work in the past. Obviously, this policy development process evolving, and perhaps this kind of discussion is the kind of discussion that could be helpful for you with some of the folks who have led task forces or previous chairs, as well as Bruce.
Yeah, that is fine, Marilyn. I will be seeing a number of you shortly in Washington, and I would be happy to discuss that, and obviously in KL we may have a broader opportunity to go over some of this. I fully recognize what you're saying. I don't think there is a problem on that. It is just the way we actually fill it in practice, because I think from what I've seen over the months that I'm involved is that all of the things you mentioned, although I know the GMZO Council has a preference for the one view on it, but effectively all of those situations arise, and the staff is also requested to draft up documents in which the opinions of everybody goes, and they're asked to sort of try to crystallize out what the common ground is, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we need to look at all of this. But I'd be very happy to have discussions on this. Obviously, if we do this in parallel to us starting the recruitment procedures, then by the time we get to the phase of interviews, then I will have clearly in mind what the council wants and how it views it, and I can then project this on the offer, so to speak, we have in front of us, and make sure that we match this as best as we can.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's become apparent, particularly for new chairs of task force that haven't previously chaired a policy development task force, is almost a guidelines or rules of procedure document of some sort, and that would be useful both for the staff members that are filling the, you know, for the individuals that fill those new positions as to what, how they are expected to interact and what the levels of authority are and so on, and try and specify that a little bit, and what the role of the chair of the task force is and what the role of a member of the task force is. So I think what would be useful in my mind is over the next month or so, we should use the collective experience of some of the people that have been involved in ICANN for a while and have run some of these processes to try and document, I guess, almost role descriptions of what the chair should do, what an individual member of the task force should do, and what the what an ICANN staff person should do, and just try and clarify some of the things. So I think one of the problems that's happened in the last year or so is we've had quite a few new people, both in terms of ICANN staff and in terms of new chairs and in terms of members of task forces that are new and haven't previously been involved in policy development, that often I think people are unclear as to you know, what their roles are. Would others agree with that assessment?
Yeah, Bruce, Paul here. I think that would be very useful also because I guess with ICANN broadening, there are more and more new faces involved in this room from other parts of the world where maybe there is not necessarily a lot of experiences with it, and where this particular experience is certainly not known. So I think the more we can do in helping the new ones get accustomed and acquainted with how it works and what some of the pitfalls are, which we need to avoid, I think that would be extremely useful.
And even just sort of understanding the term ICANN, because I know a question arose in the Rome meeting, because I think in a report I gave on the GNSI, I used the term ICANN, and the question was I referring to ICANN as a community, was I referring to ICANN the corporate organisation, or was I referring to the ICANN staff? And sometimes when you read the different task force reports, that ambiguity appears again, because we'll have a statement like, you know, ICANN should develop such and such a procedure, and the question that really is almost comes back on you, because, well, who's actually going to develop that procedure? Well, it will be us. And so at the end of the day, we're just recommending more work for ourselves. It's not someone else that will do that. Whereas in another instance, we might be very specifically asking the staff to do something. So it's trying to clarify some of those terminology a bit more.
Yeah, I think Bruce Paul here from my side, this is a very, very justified remark. I regularly have to ask people when they criticize, ask ICANN, even those who are within ICANN, whether they are criticizing themselves or whether they're criticizing the staff. So I think this is indeed a good point.
Bruce and Paul, this is Kurt. Perhaps after we send the job descriptions, we could form a small committee of a couple council members and a couple staff members to sort of write that framework.
Yes, I think that's what I'd recommend, and I guess get a small committee to write a bit of a framework, and then pass that for the whole council to review and to comment on. So you know, it's not limited to a small group, ultimately. The other thing, I had a discussion, I briefly spoke to Paul Toomey before this call, just to talk a little bit about similar sort of issues. You know, how do we interact with the different staff roles, and how do we sort of protect the staff to some degree, in that, you know, there often are conflicts between individual members of a task force with particular views, and we need to be clear that ultimately everyone's responsible towards reaching a consensus. If there's a disagreement, it's not going to get resolved at the council or the board level. It really has to be resolved by us first. What I suggested with Paul Toomey was that we actually get a bit of a teleconference next week just to talk this through a bit more, with, say, Paul Toomey, Paul Verhoef, Kurt, and then, you know, a few of us from the council who can let me know who want to participate. It will probably be Thursday next week, just to talk that through a little bit more and just start getting some actions. And one of those actions, as Kurt said, is to just actually start explaining some of the roles of, you know, what's the chair's role, what's the task force members' roles, what's the ICANN staff's role, because then when people are applying for the jobs or during the job interview process, you've actually got some material to work with.
Hi, Bruce, this is Kurt.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's right. I also think, though, in the meantime, we should post some form of job description in order to start getting candidates together, with the understanding that there's going to be a large overlap with our first stab at a job description in the final process, so that we can do this in parallel and as quickly as possible.
Yes. Yeah, my preference would be to get a job description and advertisement out, you know, by next week, basically.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the time frame you're looking at?
I think we can do that.
Yep. That's
of course Paul's choice. I don't want to be talking to him. But
what's that, sorry?
Oh, that's for Paul Verhoef to say ultimately, but I mean, that's we can do that.
Yeah. Is there a draft already available? This is Paul Verhoef. To Paul Verhoef, have you got drafts already on paper that you can send out, or where are you up to in terms of the position descriptions?
Yes, I have drafts which are nearly finished. I just want to make sure that internally I get from a few colleagues their approval of it. So we should have those ready by the end of the week internally, I would hope.
Okay. Well, I'll send a note out on the council list just asking individual council members to contact me if they wish to be personally involved in reviewing that. And really, we need fast turnaround. So if I get a document from Paul, we're sort of looking at sort of 24, 48 hours comment process, I assume. Is that?
Yeah, that'd be right.
Yeah. So anyone that chooses to be involved needs to be wary that if they're going to be involved, they need to be able to respond quickly. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Paul, and that's certainly helped clarify. And I agree, we need to kind of get the advertisements out there, and then in parallel start working on just clarifying what the expectations are of the council itself, and what the expectations are for chairs of the various committees or task forces, and how they need to interact with the staff managers. One of the key things is really work allocation, I guess, Paul, in that if an individual is across three or four task forces, well, clearly someone has to be across that overall workload, so that person's not being asked to work full-time for each individual task force, and otherwise they'll burn out.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to just understand and have a bit of discussion about how we manage that as well. So I'll try and, in addition to the position description work that we can do mostly via mailing list, set up a conference call for towards the end of next week with some of the senior ICANN staff and those that wish to be involved in the GNSO, just to talk through some of those issues. Are there any other questions or comments on that process?
Yeah, Nicholas here.
Nicholas.
I was just wondering, where will the new positions be filled geographically? Will they be posted in the U.S., or will someone work with Paul in Brussels?
Yeah, Paul here, Nicholas. Our current approach is to st- state a preference for the positions to be filled in Brussels because they would be working under my supervision. But this is not the golden rules. If there are people from parts of the world who have good reasons that they would want to be in Los Angeles or in the further future, we get approval for other offices in other parts of the world at some point in the future, then we would consider moving them as well. So we would want to approach this flexibly, but with an indication of what our preference would be.
And what was your preference, Paul?
Brussels.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions or comments?
Yeah, could we just recap the timelines again and make sure those are captured in the minutes just to...
My understanding, I guess, is by the end of this week, the ICANN staff will have available draft position descriptions, so they'll be available, and the council should provide feedback on those probably by, say, Wednesday next week, in order for the positions to be posted by the end of next week. Does that sound roughly right, Paul?
Sounds right to me. Kurt may want to say something about this as well from his side.
Excuse me, Glenn, I'm going to call off and call back in. I'm getting interference on Bluetooth.
Okay, Kurt?
This is Kurt. I've personally reviewed Paul's job descriptions, and some of the staff members have too. I don't know if Paul Toomey's passed on them or wants to pass on them, so that might spill over to the beginning of next week before that review is done.
But basically, we're talking about by the end of June.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And then also, Marilyn, I want to set up a teleconference just to talk it through a bit further towards the end of next week, perhaps with some of the past chairs of task forces and from the GNSO side, and just with Paul and Kurt and Paul Toomey, just to sort of roughly get an agreement on, I suppose, operating procedures between the different individuals.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that would be a good opportunity to kind of hear about the different kinds of work that have developed out of task forces and out of council when council is working as a committee of the whole.
Yeah, so just repeat that again, Marilyn.
I was just saying that would be a good opportunity for the staff to hear more about the kinds of work that develop out of different task forces, out of the implementation working group, and out of council, not just in relation to our council meetings, but when council is working as a committee of the whole on policy?
Yes. Yes, that's right. Certainly we can give a bit of a history of some of the things that we've done in the transfers and the who is work, you know, the last couple of years and how we've, the sorts of things that a staff support person could assist with in those processes. Yeah.
And I would just like one comment for you to think about, Paul and Kurt. In the implementation of policy, we have found that we have had a heavy reliance for a short period of time on the legal team at ICANN to advise us on how the contract will be affected. That tends to be, you know, it's sporadic, but it can be someone who has legal training or legal skills needs to provide that kind of advice to us in relation to how policy and where we have to modify, if the contracts have to be modified, et cetera.
Yeah, Marilyn, Paul here. We have realized that, and we are currently making sure that our legal team is following what is being done, and we are in discussion with them on issues regularly. And so what we intend to do is basically make sure that the interface from you with us is relatively simple, and that we internally make sure that all those who need to be involved and provide advice in council and whatever are kept abreast of it and actually do that.
Sure, I was only mentioning it to you to consider on whether in the meeting Bruce was suggesting you might want to expand the attendance from your side.
Yes, it might be good to have the general counsel or the deputy general counsel there as well, just to get that perspective. I think that's fair.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that's probably enough discussion on that, and we can summarise that set of actions roughly. I'll try and summarise that in an email at the end of this call, just so people are clear. And thanks for that, Paul and Kurt. The other topic that arose towards the end of last meeting was about arranging a workshop with the CCNSO on IDN matters. I guess since then ICANN itself has established a whole day workshop on that topic, and there's been a committee formed to try and, I guess, a program committee to work out what topics should be discussed there, and if individual members of council or constituencies have topics or things that they wish to have included on that agenda, they should forward those through, I guess, to Tina Dam at ICANN, who's coordinating that input, or council members can also contact me. The other thing that's arisen, and I think Marilyn raised it on the list, is whether we should meet with the CCNSO in some form in Kuala Lumpur. I followed up on that, and I've spoken to one of the people that are sort of organising the agenda for the CCNSO. And the view is that, fairly similar to what we've done with the GAC, that the council members will be invited to meet with the CCNSO as a whole, in other words, the membership as a whole, and just talk about the best way to liaise between the two groups. And probably what I'd be recommending is that when we have the physical meetings, that we have some sort of breakfast or lunch between the two councils, so that people can sort of get to know each other, etc., and that we have the same sort of thing that we have with ALAC and with GAC and have been working with some time with the CCTLDs, is having a one or two people appointed from the CCNSO to attend our meetings, and we would probably likewise appoint perhaps one or two of our people to be able to attend CCNSO council meetings. But that will be a discussion, and the preliminary time for that discussion to talk about that is 5 o'clock on Monday, the 19th of July. So just giving people early notice of that on the schedule of activities for ICANN.
Yeah, Chris, this is just a note that I was going to talk under other business about the organization of the WISIS informational session. Is this time firm on Monday?
The 5 o'clock time I just mentioned.
Yeah, and how long?
I don't think I'd describe it as firm. I've seen a draft agenda. If you believe it needs to be changed, then let me know.
Well, this meeting would not be the breakfast or lunch that you were suggesting.
No. This is actually very similar to what we did with the GAC, where
we
met the whole GAC briefly,
right,
you know, for half
right.
an hour or so.
And this would be, I'm sorry, for how long?
I think it's scheduled for about a half an hour. The topic of discussion is what's the best way to liaise between the CCNSO as a whole and the GNSO.
Yeah.
I would assume, Bruce, that Glenn will follow up with the reminder and more specific information as we get closer to KL, right?
That's correct, yeah. But one thing that's probably, because these things need to be at least scheduled as far in advance as possible, do you think there's a conflict of schedule, Marilyn? Is that what you're implying?
Let me make 2 points. I think if you could possibly expand that to at least 45 minutes in order to allow some dialogue, since this is the first meeting, that might be helpful. The committee that is trying to plan the WISIS informational session has been working with Teresa Swinehart and with Denise on possible times, and we had considered a late afternoon session on Monday,
only because we're concerned about having an opportunity for the GAC to attend that session. But, you know, that was, we had not closed on anything because Teresa was going back to consult with Kurt and others on time feasibilities. I was just trying to nail down in my mind, you know, because this is important to do, the meeting with the CCNSO Council.
Yes, it's one of these things where you're trying to just find slots. I just took a stab at it by saying, towards the end of Monday, the various, because Monday is mainly the constituency meetings, and usually they're finished by sort of 4 or 5 o'clock, so I thought, well, that's probably a reasonable time. So that was about the extent of the rationale for it. Yeah, so I guess perhaps if we use Glenn as the main contact point there in terms of scheduling, and if you can keep Glenn abreast of what you're
sure
to do with the WISIS, Marilyn.
And let me ask from your, just consider, if would it be feasible to move the meeting with the CCNSO potentially into the morning of Tuesday?
I think it would be, yes.
Perhaps we could.
Well, I'm speaking for myself here, not for the CCTLD.
Yeah. Well, perhaps we could. I could just email Glenn and Teresa and Denise, and we could work out the balance of trying to have the GAC available. While we're on that topic, do we have a scheduled time with the GAC ourselves?
Not yet. No, I don't know whether Susan or Christopher could comment on that.
Thanks for raising that. I was planning to put the question to you all. As you know, the GAC begins its meetings prior to the rest of the community. We are actually holding a GAC GNSO working group meeting on Saturday, the 17th, in the morning. Our schedule takes us through Wednesday, I believe. No, I'm sorry. Through Tuesday. And then we are open. Those are all plenary meetings beginning on Sunday. I personally would very much like to have the opportunity for at least myself as liaison, but preferably for those of my working group who would be interested in having the opportunity to meet with the GNSO or the council, however best you would like to structure that. I know we often complicate things, we the GAC, because our meetings are typically at the same time as yours.
Yes, yes. Mm. Again, it's sort of, Tuesday morning is an area, because I'm really just looking at the schedule and it's only very high level. So there's the GNSO constituency meetings on Monday, the IDN workshops on Wednesday, and the council meeting I'm assuming we'll have on the Tuesday afternoon, you know, between about 2 and 4 o'clock. So the Tuesday morning doesn't seem to be an issue for the GNSO. If the GAC or the CCNSO was available on the Tuesday morning, we could probably, you know, do meetings then.
Mm. Well, thank you. This is Suzanne again. Why don't I take note of that and then try to explore how we can manage that in view of what we have on the GAC
agenda, yeah.
Plenary agenda. That's my problem, and I'm also, my apologies, this is a purely administrative problem on our end. I may be traveling alone, so it's a little awkward to leave a plenary session.
Yeah.
Right, because Christopher here, Bruce, I was thinking of late Monday afternoon as a possibility, but Suzanne is right, it's going to be difficult to rationalize those bilaterals in the middle of the plenary. The Tuesday afternoon, it depends when the GAC concludes. If we're on time, sort of 5:36-ish, there's probably a window for
Yeah. Well, perhaps, Christopher, if you could nominate some times and we can just sort of get back to the list generally on that.
Yeah, because in terms of actual full session, like we had with you in Rome, our present priority is to have an hour session with CCNSO. I think that's fair.
Right.
I didn't understand, Christopher.
Well, we don't envisage on the agenda at present a full bilateral session between GAC and the GNSF Council as we had in Rome. That's not on the agenda. So I think what we're talking about is the best opportunity for Suzanne and a few of her colleagues to meet with you bilaterally outside the GAC plenary.
Okay.
Are we comfortable with not having the bilateral? Is the council comfortable with not having the opportunity for a bilateral?
The problem, Marilyn, is that there are quite a large number of important constituencies, and if GAC can't have a full plenary bilateral with each of them at each meeting, it would just absorb too much of the available time. But why don't we leave it at that, and I'll consult Suzanne, and we'll come back with some options.
Yeah, I suspect it probably depends a little bit on where we are with who is at the time. If who is getting to a converged state where we're really looking for feedback from the GAC, then we probably want to address the GAC a little bit more widely. If not, in other words, if we don't have major policy recommendations that we're seeking for approval, we probably don't need at this meeting to be meeting with the whole GAC. But that's just a personal view. What's your thoughts, Marilyn? You're thinking there are other issues we should be discussing? Or?
Why don't we leave that topic open, as you kind of are suggesting, and look at what policy issues we'll be addressing, and see, you know, sort of where that might lead both the liaison and the secretary from the GAC and also the council in terms of their thinking?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Bruce, excuse me, this is Suzanne one more time. My apologies for taking up time, but I think this is probably what you've outlined is the best approach. The most active members on the GAC tracking GNSO issues will be those members of the working group. So what I would try to do, I will alert them to our discussion today that there is an interest, and I think you could feel more confident that the level of interest may well be higher among the members of that particular working group as opposed to those who are tracking, who have identified other issues as their priority. So at a minimum, I don't think we should be too disappointed if we can't have a full bilateral, but if we can arrange some exchange between our GAC working group and your interested members, that's at least a step forward.
Yep, I think that's right. Okay. I think that's sort of covered off the CCNSO and GAC issues. So just getting on to the first item of the agenda for this meeting again, and that's in response to the Who Is Task Forces. Jordan, you sent a note through regarding what you perceive to be the next steps as we're moving towards public comment, particularly between the first and second task forces. Can you give a bit of an update on that?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of elements. First is a request, I think, on behalf of all three of the task force chairs that relates to the procedure after the close of the public comment period. The bylaws actually indicate that at that point the staff manager is supposed to simply sort of write up the public comments and insert a new section into the report that I guess summarizes them without any additional discussion or work to be done by the task force. And I think all three of the task forces aren't yet in a position that we feel that the reports are ready for sort of final action. And further, I think all three of the task forces would like some opportunity to evaluate the public comments, as well as any additional input they may have had from constituencies in the form of, for example, impact statements for the various recommendations that have been made, which I know aren't present at least the Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 reports, but to take the whatever new inputs are available, especially including the public comment period, react to them, modify the reports as appropriately, and then in some cases vote on them. I know Task Force 1 hasn't yet had a formal vote on their report. And after the task force had some opportunity to react to the public comment period and modify the report, then to submit it for a vote and then send it to council instead of just having a sort of summary of the public comment period.
Right. So you're wanting to possibly update the recommendations. I guess some of the task forces have yet to really reach firm recommendations. Is that a fair summary? So
I would say let me speak only for Task Force 2 in saying that I think some of our recommendations certainly could suffer from some additional tweaking if we have the opportunity to see what has evolved in the public comment period. We have a number of questions left open in our recommendations. I think there are recommendations there, but I think they're subject to a number of questions that may or may not be resolved during the public comment period. If they are, I think it would be productive to be able to incorporate that and make them a little more firmed up than they appear to be today.
Right, and the other issue is the overlap or potentially converging some of the work of Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 prior to the council sort of voting on final recommendations. So
right. So
have
correct.
You given much thought to that? Or?
Yeah. So there's a second. So there's a second line of thought there, and we don't have a specific recommendation as to how exactly we intend to proceed. But we've already had one call between all three task forces, and on Friday, Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 will have a follow-on call to establish a procedure to move forward. Because we have identified, Barbara's at least at a high level identified some areas of interaction, she calls it, between the Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 report. I think there's actually some substantial overlap, and in some cases the Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 reports tackle similar subject matter and don't necessarily come to similar conclusions about them, which is obviously problematic when it gets to the council level, in that the council would be forced to sort of pick and choose recommendations, I suppose. So we're hoping to spend some time in some joint discussions between the two task forces, either making a more clear delineation between which task force is supposed to be handling which portion of the subject matter, or perhaps to come to some joint recommendation, or perhaps to something else. I don't want to presuppose what sort of options we're going to come out of the call on Friday, but we're looking for ways to resolve the tension between the two reports. So there's some additional work that needs to be done there. I can't say at this point whether or not it's going to take the form of anything requiring formal approval or guidance from the council, because it could just be the two task forces will get together and realize it. That they've been sort of treading on each other's toes and agree to step back and draw the lines more clearly between what each task force is supposed to be doing, in which case you'll simply receive reports that are a little less in conflict. But I would hope that the council would, at the very least, be open to the possibility of receiving perhaps joint recommendations of the task forces where there's overlap or some sort of, Barbara's even suggested, and I know that there's some resistance to this by various members of the task force, so I don't want to indicate that it's got a lot of it's a supported position by various constituencies, but some have suggested that it may make sense to actually merge the two reports into one report covering the ground indicated by both Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 for reference.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly.
That was kind of my personal view as well, but it's just that there's some interdependencies there, and I think my view is I think it was appropriate for the task forces to originally consider their areas. So one area is essentially about access, you know, what sort of access control is necessary, and the other is kind of, well, what's the content if there is access control, what goes in which level of access. I tend to think that ultimately to have a coherent recommendation to the council and to the board, they at least need to be consistent.
And I would just as a member of Task Force 2 and someone who's been an observer on the other two task forces at Maryland, I would make an observation that the task force, I think, right now are faced with the following challenge. We in the task force really have to realize that it's our job to present consensus policy that council can vote on. And right now, we haven't yet, Bruce, had the opportunity to have a thorough understanding of the implementation issues related to potential policy recommendations.
Right, and that's very important. Yeah. And the other issue is, I suppose, getting back to the public comment, whether we need to do something or the task forces might want to manage that a bit more, perhaps have some open teleconferences with a broader group of people, because I've noted in the past relying on email responses to the website has probably not really been sufficient in the past.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the current level of response is, but I know on other things, if you have a look at the ICANN website and you click on the click through wherever they ask for public comment, there's usually not a lot of comments there.
You may recall, Glenn, that we did that in both Transfer Task Force and also the Who Is Task Force.
At Maryland.
And we just got somewhere around 10 to 15 people on those calls.
Yeah, I think it's particularly important on the implementation side to try and involve a number of registrars, perhaps, in some of the access-type issues,
mm-hmm.
and involve a number of people, perhaps, coming from the different elements of privacy versus intellectual property, involving some broader
mm-hmm.
groups in those areas in the area of Task Force 2.
Well, let me ask Jordan and whoever else from the task force is, what we might do is to propose to the task force is that they hold such calls using the posted report as the base of comment, and sort of acting like a panel to hear comments and respond to questions, and try to document those as done in the past. As an additional form of taking input.
Yeah, go ahead, Jordan.
Thanks, Bruce. I would certainly say, looking at least for Task Force 2 at this point, we have only, I would say, two comments that are actually supposed to be comments related to the task force. So I think there's a variety of things that we ought to do, perhaps, to make sure that we have sufficient input. One might be just to simply extend the public comment period, which I know is set to expire in the next couple of days. And certainly having calls and other forms of participatory exercises as well might be useful. And I guess the open question is whether it makes sense to think about using the forum at the Kuala Lumpur meeting. I don't want to say forum because there's nothing there yet, but the opportunity of people getting together at Kuala Lumpur for further import, or if that pushes out the timeline too late, or if there's some way to integrate that in. But I certainly think the idea of calls in the short term make a lot of sense.
Jordan.
Could I get in the queue?
Thomas, yes, go ahead.
I would also suggest to extend the public comment period that's going on now and is actually set to end tomorrow. We have three reports with a total of 202 pages out for public comment, and it's kind of difficult for people to digest and comment on this broad and complex material in 3 weeks. I would greatly prefer if we could extend that comment period to give people more time to understand what's going on, and to give those of us who are engaged in outreach some time to perform that outreach and explain to people what's going on.
Bruce, I'd like to be back in the queue.
Yep. Anyone else want to be in the queue? Okay, go ahead, Ben.
I would support extending the public comment period, but I would also support council advising its task force that they should undertake organizing at least two conference calls, posted and made it widely posted. What we did is not to just rely on the posting to the ICANN website, but members of the task forces posted actively to their constituencies. We did a call focused on registries and registrars on transfers, and then a separate one focused on, you know, anyone else interested, so we really delve into the questions. And I think the input that we got was very educational and very helpful. And so if we extend the time frame, I'd like for us to direct our task forces to hold at least two outreach sessions by phone, which tends to make it possible for everyone to participate, and try to get a set of recommendations that we can discuss as council, not vote, but discuss as council at Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be in a position to vote on things in Kuala Lumpur. And I think what we definitely need is for the task forces to, I agree, just changing the date on a public comment period doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get more public comments. I think we need to encourage the task forces to do, as you say, Marilyn, to establish some teleconferences, actually invite people that we know are interested in this topic to those teleconferences. And that will probably stimulate the people to actually make public comments on the website. Without doing anything, it's the old sort of marketing thing. Without any marketing of the topic, you won't get any more input, I don't think.
Excuse me, this is Suzanne. Could I put a question to the group?
Yes.
Well, thank you. Just being the interface between GNSO and the task forces and the GAC, I think it would be very helpful if I could be better able to explain what your next steps are. I think the further outreach is an excellent idea, but it's so as to be a little more helpful to you in encouraging their participation. I have been in receipt of some questions. There is apparently some confusion as to how and when the three different reports will be merged, by whom. And so there is a hesitancy, if you will, has been on the part of the GAC as to weighing in, because there has been an expectation that we would be asked to comment on a final merged report at some point.
Right.
I don't know if the GAC is unique in its myopia. Yeah. But you may have other constituencies who have the same questions and don't understand when to weigh in.
Yeah, well, I guess the answer to that, Susan, is that a decision hasn't been made on that. There is no policy, there's no process reason why they have to be. You know, we can't have three reports with recommendations. I think the key thing, though, is if we do have three reports instead of a single merged report, that we can't have them conflicting, because then we're basically saying, you know, we've got these three groups that are proposing different things, and that would put both the council and the board in an impossible position. So whether we have three reports or one report, the outcomes need to be consistent with each other.
Bruce, would you like to speak?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just in response to the generality of that last question, I thought the answer is that when a report's out for public comment, that is typically a good time to comment upon it, particularly given the fact that ICANN's timetable, even with extensions, means the period for public comment is increasingly shortening, and some bodies, of course, need longer to consider and make public comments than others. The point is, I think you can make comments at one point in time, and then they can be added to at another, but I'd have thought the general message should be, please, let's all try to buy in to the public comment period that we have set up and foreseen in the PDP.
As early as possible, yeah.
Could I respond to that? And I'm sorry if I generated confusion or if it seemed, probably sounded like a very stupid point I was making. However, from the GAC perspective as GAC, the GAC cannot arrive at a consensus position unless it meets in plenary. So there is currently some dialogue going on within the GAC as to whether governments are comfortable, and it's entirely up to individual governments to respond individually. However, as a GAC, in toto, there can be no response from the GAC, which is the current. The preferred approach is to develop a GAC response, and we cannot have one until we meet in Kuala Lumpur.
So I have a question for you in follow-up to that, Suzanne.
I quite understand the difficulty of, and the challenges, I don't mean to say difficulty, but the challenges of trying to work within a very diverse group of governments and the complexity of the extensive draft reports that we have out there. I'm sure some government representatives are reading the reports, but others are going to wait for, and appropriately so, they're going to wait for what is, they view, the final recommendation and then provide advice.
Right.
And so...
Yeah, that's advice to the board at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
So, right. So you know, I think the question for perhaps we could sort of think about is, that advice will be to the board. But, of course, what we want to do through working with you and with the other country... The other countries who are active in your group, is to try to take input along the way so that we don't find ourselves, nor does the GAC, in a standoff at a later period.
Exactly. I agree with you completely. We want to avoid that. I will do my best to encourage the submission of individual comments.
So, and then we'll have the opportunity to have a meeting perhaps between... the interested parties that you were talking about, but just logistically, does GAC have to meet face to face to be in plenary?
Yes, according to our current rules of operation.
Okay, so would this mean hypothetically that we have a discussion at council about a report? Council would then, I believe, be the body. As I understand it, council would be the body merging our policy recommendations to the board and make a single set of policy recommendations to the board. We don't just forward the reports that we get. We basically forward policy recommendations to the board. And so we would be merging the output of our task forces. At that point, you would have a final set of recommendations from council to review. But that will come to you, Bruce, timing-wise. We would not be approving those until after Kuala Lumpur.
I think that's correct. Because at the point that the council approves, then it is actually being submitted to the board at that point, and then the board would be seeking the advice from the GAC and would be seeking the advice from the Security Committee and seeking
right.
the advice from ALAC. So that's kind of the formal part of the process.
So would that mean, Suzanne, just thinking ahead, that you would not, the GAC would not be able to provide that advice until Cape Town?
That may well be the case. As I say, we have anticipated possibly receiving something by KL that would be coming out of, you know, whatever procedures you all have for... agreeing to a common text or even developing a draft preliminary merged text. We will be happy to have the GAC working group make best efforts to develop a common position. But because we would not be presented with a final position by KL, the GAC would probably not want to speak to a preliminary draft except informally. Does that make sense?
It does, but I just want to ask Bruce and the ICANN staff the following question. You know, the report that council forwarded to the board on transfers, Bruce, and also on
SWIFT. Yes, yeah. I'm just trying to remember that the process hasn't quite followed that in the past. Yeah.
They're very, very different. You know, our output to the board is different from what we get from our task forces. So we would be preparing that transmittal, and Louis did a significant amount of that work in what was transmitted to the board last time.
Yes. In fact, what happened, if I recall the process, there was a physical meeting, I think it was in March of last year, and at that physical meeting, it was decided, and it must have been in consultation with the GAC, I would expect, that the particular WHOIS recommendation wasn't a didn't have public policy impact on something, I think was the description. Whereas transfers were seen to be related to competition, which could have a public policy impact, and the GAC was then asked to review that at the end of that meeting. Now, the interesting thing is that then the board signed off on that in April, so I don't quite understand what the GAC did with that between the March meeting and when the board signed off on it. Maybe GAC came back and said it didn't believe there was any public policy impact.
Right, and the General Counsel prepared that recommendation, and as I recall, the GAC accepted his recommendation about who is, because we had made really relatively minor changes.
Yeah, Christopher, you would have been involved with the GAC at that time, were you?
I don't think I was involved with that particular episode, but I'd certainly be prepared to look into the archive and see exactly what the steps were that were taken. But I agree with Suzanne that it's difficult for GAC to prioritise comments until they know what the final version is that they're commenting on. And I have to say from my experience, though I guess I regret it, but I think one has to be realistic, there are very few national officials who in their own job descriptions and in relation to their authorities and their staff, who feel comfortable about just making public contributions to a public comment period at an early stage in the debate.
And
there are some national officials who are strictly tied by the provisions of national legislation, and if you press people to make a comment, they will just say, well, please read our national law.
So I think this just tells us, Bruce, that perhaps when we move on, we can offline work with Glenn on the timetable, and we're going to have to figure out how we get the GAC a draft preliminary final document. How it's going to be drafted, and that means if council discusses our recommendations from our task forces in Kuala Lumpur, and then we come back and have a vote on it at a subsequent council meeting, we probably would be drafting at that point, so that council then have a vote on what we forward to board. Sounds to me like we've got a drafting exercise really between Kuala Lumpur and our next council meeting.
Yeah, I suspect on a topic, picking who is particularly, which has been controversial for some time, the board is probably not going to vote on it itself until Cape Town, I would imagine. I don't think the board would vote on it in a teleconference between meetings.
Yeah.
And so what would probably happen, again, just for Suzanne's timetabling, is I would expect that after the KOR meeting, at some point, the GNSA will finalise its recommendations and vote on those. At that point, that we would submit them to the board and to the GAC, and then the GAC would, I guess, provide some formal advice at the end of its meeting in Cape Town in advance of the board meeting.
Oh, but thank you. I think that's very helpful for me to know, and let me just offer up again, we will be meeting for the first time in several meetings. The GAC working group will finally meet on, I know it's in advance of many of the arrival dates for all of you, but Saturday, July 17. If there are texts or if there are drafts or if there's simply information that you want me to share with that working group, I'm very open to that. So please note that date as a first opportunity to use me as your liaison to educate, brief, update the GAC working group.
Yep, and certainly we should try and have a meeting in KL between that GAC working group and the Who Is groups of some form.
I would certainly like that. I think it would be extremely helpful.
Yep, okay. Brian Darville, just on the topic of Task Force 3, Perhaps you'd just give a summary of where you think that task force is at and what you see the next steps are there.
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with Jordan's point that it would be useful to have some additional time to incorporate the public comments, and I think that it may make some sense to extend the public comment period. We're not, you know, as obvious from the preliminary report, we don't really have consensus, and perhaps with some additional time we may be able to achieve consensus on some of the issues, so that may be valuable. We're going to meet later today to talk about just procedurally going forward. I guess that'll be impacted by whether or not the council decides to extend the public comment period. But I think we would like to, you know, at least among the task force, you and then, you know, incorporate where appropriate the public comments and then spend a little more time seeing if we can come to some kind of consensus on some of the recommendations that have been made. So, I feel like we still have a fair amount of work to do if we're going to get to that point, which would be desirable.
So your current public comment period is what, till the end of this week, is it?
I think it's through tomorrow. It's the same for all three task forces, as I understand.
Yeah, so what date is that, the 17th?
It's the 17th, that's correct.
Yeah. If we extend it, it's the 1st of July, is that sufficient?
The 1st of July will allow the task forces, is this a week and a half it would give the task forces to hold conference calls and hold meetings?
I mean, we could make it the 6th of July, which is, you know, that basically gives you two clear weeks.
Yeah, that means that I start traveling on the 15th, and I think that will be true for many other people on their way to KL. So that would only give the task force then, the task forces in extending the consultation period, our instructions to the task forces should be to really continue to meet and work and begin to try to, you know, do as much.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I think the council could agree to extending the public comment process until, say, Monday the 5th of July. But at the same time, we would be advising task forces to continue to, in the case of Task Force 3, continue to try and develop more of a consensus position across all constituencies. And in the case of Task Force 1 and 2, to identify a consistent set of recommendations between the two task forces. Then what we would be doing, I guess, is for the meeting in KL itself, meeting with council, perhaps in a working group format with the task forces to try and further converge the consensus position, I guess. It's a bit hard to comment on it without seeing where the reports are by that stage, but I guess if the reports could be updated by, say, the 12th of July, so there's a clear week between when the reports are updated and the meetings in KL for us to discuss them further.
Bruce, don't we also need to ask the task forces to identify, you know, first of all, there are some things that may require examination of implementation, so I think they need to identify those areas where they may have a policy recommendation, but it will take an examination of the feasibility or availability of resources to undertake an implementation, such as IRIS, for instance. So I think our task forces actually need to try to probably divide their recommendations into those things that they can make a policy recommendation on and the areas where they have a dependency or need further work, such as the general counsel or ICANN staff needs to make a determination about the impact of such a policy recommendation on the contract.
Yeah, well, what we did in the case of Who Is last time, and I think we probably did it in transfers as well, is there was actually a separate implementation committee that that provided a report before the council was prepared to sign off on the recommendations.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's just try and get some dates, just so that we've got some something there for people to work to, though. So if we say the public comment period is extended to the 5th of July, let's say that the reports are updated by the 12th of July, and that those are some dates, then in terms of what needs to happen, we would be recommending that the task forces arrange some public teleconferences as part of that public consultation process, and recommend that the task forces continue to work towards consensus positions and consider where further implementation analysis is required.
Can we also clarify for our task forces what consensus means? Consensus in what we follow, I believe we ask our task forces to follow the same practice that we follow in council.
Yeah, do you want to try and explain what that is?
Well, consensus has been defined as a two-thirds vote.
Yeah.
And you can forward policy with only a majority vote, majority support. You also are required to provide minority reports for anyone who submits a minority report. But there are now requirements for what, you know, such reports would have to include. So
yes.
if our task forces are taking votes, I think there's two things: trying to come up with the general concept of an agreement that everyone is generally in agreement on what the policy recommendation is, but when they vote it, they can only define it as consensus if it has two-thirds vote.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, Bruce, Jordan, can I just add that the bylaws do call for an indication of in the report itself for whether the vote was a majority vote or whether it was a supermajority vote of two-thirds. So there's an explicit requirement in the bylaws that be indicated as part of the report.
Yeah, and I guess that I would view that that's the minimum requirement. And what we're really, ideally, to get community support, we're trying to get as close to three-thirds rather than two-thirds as we
right.
can.
Right.
So, certainly at the task force level, as opposed to the council level, the task force level really should be trying to get as close to three-thirds as it can. Because if you've got something that's just, let's say it's exactly on two-thirds at the task force level, it's probably going to struggle when it gets to the council, would be my guess.
And so that might mean that a task force would find that it now has seven possible policy recommendations and that it can only bring four forward. Or three.
That's correct, yes.
And I'm not sure our task forces, Brian, you and Jordan would need to comment on that, but I don't know if our task forces, our members, have had the opportunity to think that through.
Thomas here. What does bring forward mean? If I'm not mistaken, let me put it like this. I don't have a policy proposal that does not receive two-thirds majority or consensus on a task force, doesn't it still have to be presented to council, even if it was just voted on the task force as part of the report?
It's correct, it could be part of the report. I think what Marilyn's saying is that you might have in the report that you might report on something having one-third of support, and that's in your report. But in terms of a policy recommendation that the council would be putting through to the board, it would only be putting through to the board those which have you know, greater than two-thirds support.
And Thomas, it might mean that a task force would have to undertake, or council might decide to take those three areas and send them back for further work. You know, it might be because something is just not thoroughly analyzed, such as the implementation cost of IRIS or something of that nature.
Yeah, and that's certainly what happened last time. What happened is the council put it back on the task forces to do some analysis of the implementation before
right.
it would accept some particular recommendations.
This is Jordan. I'll just add that I think that having looked at Task Force's 3 report, they have, there's explicit votes by each constituency on each of the individual policy recommendations, and I know that within Task Force 2 as well, although it became unnecessary because at least in the publication phase, all of the constituencies supported the publication of the report, that I did request that if people were not able to support the report in their entirety, they could indicate support for individual policy recommendations on a one-off basis. So I think that option has, at least in the task forces that have had votes thus far, that's the type of approach that's taken. Although I'll add that I think, to a certain extent, there's some interrelationship. Even though we have discrete policy recommendations, they make more sense as a package than they do as one-off items. At least there's some places where there's some relationship between the recommendations, I think. And in my mind, it's always better to be able to have the package sort of considered as a whole as opposed to individual piece elements.
Yeah, and I think part of the issue is an understanding, and this is something that, you know, we talked about right at the beginning of the call, is kind of some of the roles of members, but there's an element of advocacy such that if you're representing, say, the registrar's constituency, you're going to represent a particular view, but so that's an advocacy element, but there's also an element of working together with your fellow committee members to get a consensus result in the purest form, in other words, a 3 out of 3 result. And certainly where we are now, it's quite reasonable at this stage, and we're publishing preliminary reports, to have some areas where some points have got more support than other points, but between now and KL, we should really be trying to do further work on those to get everyone across it. And individual members of those task forces need to be saying, all right, well, what do we need to do to change this so that we can all agree, as opposed to just accepting that you've only got a 2/3 or whatever the voting score is. Okay, any further discussion on that? What I'd like to do is just propose a motion, just as a procedural motion, that the council approves extending the public comment period to the 5th of July, that the reports should be updated by the 12th of July, that the task forces are encouraged to initiate some public teleconferences to stimulate public during that period from until the 5th of July, and that the task forces are encouraged between now and the 12th of July to further work towards a complete consensus position. Do I have a second?
If you need a second on that, Bruce, I'll do that.
Thank you, Ken. All those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that motion has passed. The next item on the agenda is... Can I find the agenda? I think it's to do with the approval process, the GTLD approval process. We had a meeting several weeks ago. Out of that, I think we had agreement on the general framework. I still have an action on me, which I have yet to do, which is to summarise the criteria under the two broad categories of competition and security and stability. And then after that, it's up for council members to suggest whether they believe there needs to be a third category in not covered by that set of criteria. What I would then do is attempt to write up a preliminary report prior to KL and have that published for public comment. So I would be aiming to get a preliminary report done, I guess, by probably by the 12th of July as well, and start a public comment period at least a week before the KL meeting. so that we can get some public input on that topic. Any questions or comments on that process? Okay. Our .NET is just struggling to pull up the agenda, so I'm doing this from memory. The .NET process, Philip, do you want to just give a bit of a summary on what's happening there?
Yep.
And what's been done in terms of public comment?
Yep. So since the .NET subcommittee got going in mid-April, we had four conference calls, and out of that emerged a preliminary report, which essentially made a set of recommendations which we divided into two categories. We made some which we called absolute criteria, and those were basically thresholds that we expected any applicant for .NET to meet, and recommended that failure to meet those would imply disqualification. And those things had to do with things like policy compliance, consensus policies, the fact that we wanted names to be grandfathered in .NET, the fact that we wanted the .NET to remain an unsponsored, unrestricted name, and various criteria to do with minimum levels of stability, security, and technical and financial competence. And then the second set of criteria were relative criteria, which we also ranked in the order of the report. And the concept of relative criteria is that these become relevant once the absolute criteria have been met, and should be used as a basis for comparison and evaluation of competing applications. And these things included criteria related to the promotion of competition, as well as criteria relating to improved technical performance, and potentially also improved registry services. So that report was duly drafted, fully supported by the members of the subcommittee, and that was sent out on the 28th of May for its first 20-day public comment period. That ends shortly on the 18th of June. And it has to be said that the amount of comments we've received have been small. I think there was one so far, which is more of a technical reference than a full comment. But then we are making a not particularly controversial set of proposals, so it may not be too surprising that is the case. Nevertheless, if we go ahead and fulfill the timetable that we had earlier agreed upon, that will mean that we'll produce a slightly amended report around about the 25th of June, having had another meeting of the subcommittee by conference call on the 22nd. There then needs to be a further 20-day public comment period, which will probably run 25th of June to 15th of July, and that will allow us to produce a report something like the 16th of July, 17th of July, as a final report, which can then go to the GNSO Council in time for it to vote upon that during its Kuala Lumpur meeting on the 20th. And that is the state of play.
Okay, thanks for that, Philip. Any questions or comments on that update? Okay. Then finally, under any other business, Marilyn, you raised the question about what work needs to be done on the PDP or what work needs to be done in relation to new GTLDs.
Right.
I checked the MOU and I posted a note to Council shortly before this meeting, but what's in the MOU states that by a predictable strategy for selecting new GTLDs using transparent and objective procedures is to be developed by September the 30th this year and implementation to commence by the end of the year. A couple of meetings ago, we had suggested that the ICANN staff manager produce an issues report for the KL meeting that could start a policy development process going there. I believe, is Paul Verhoef still on the call?
Yes, Bruce, I am.
Paul, are you able to give a bit of an update from the ICANN staff point of view on this particular MOU deliverable?
Yes, I think I can. As you know, there are these two dates in it, September 30th, by which we need to have a strategy developed, and then we need to commence implementation of that strategy by the end of the year. So the question arises, what is the strategy? Before I answer that, we see the process as having a number of steps. The current step we're going through is, you will see that under those who have your email in front of them, point 8D, we would ask expert advice from certain bodies, agencies, and organizations regarding economic competition, trademark, and intellectual property issues. This is ongoing at the moment. You probably know that the OECD has an internal draft report out, which I think the OECD governments, at least, are making available to their industry. We're in contact with WIPO. There are our security committee is looking at this. So from that, we will get expert advice on some of the issues. Now, we will need to derive from that a sort of report which works up what the issues are and basically what the questions are we need to ask ourselves, and also with that define how we see the PDP processes, who needs to be involved in that, and what the purposes of them are, and what questions need to be answered, and then once we have the result in of all of that, obviously decisions need to be taken on how we exactly move forward. So there are a number of steps to be taken. We are currently undertaking those steps. We are currently internally also defining more precisely what it exactly is, what needs to get together, and what needs to be done. And obviously, the GNSO will be fully involved in that, and I would expect that a PDP indeed is going to be needed. But as I said, until we have the final expert advice of all of these organizations in, I don't think we are in a position to actually put up all the questions which need to be answered during such PDP processes. So we are waiting for that to come to a conclusion. The OECD has promised that they will try their best to declassify their document in time for the KL meeting so that it is publicly available and people can have a look at it. Some of the other things still need to get together as well. So this is basically all underway. And once this preliminary round of expert advice is in, we are going to be able to put the actual questions on the table.
And when do you think that would be, Paul? What sort of time frame do you think?
Well, what we are targeting indeed is September 30th, that all of this would become together. And
when you say all of it, you mean the actual policy? Because I mean, what I'm struggling is what you've described as a process where you understand what the questions and the issues are, but there also needs to be a process to, you know, come up with the selection criteria, for example, and that would then need to be signed off, and so the GNSO would need to be involved in.
Yeah, well, we are currently also, particularly John Jeffrey, is still looking at some of the legal interpretation of what we have in front of us. My thinking on this at the moment is that what we put on the table by the 30th of December will basically be an initial assessment of the staff based on all the expert advice we have, which then will put up with it the questions we will need to ask ourselves, and will put up the process by which we are going to answer those questions, including PDPs, and that totality would be what we call the strategy. You know, the problem at this point is that it isn't clear what questions we need to ask ourselves. If for those of you who may have seen the OECD report, the OECD report is, for example, isn't very clear on whether or not there is a net benefit from more competition in the GTLD area, therefore, you know, if their advice would have unequivocally been yes, more competition is useful, then obviously that would steer us in one direction. If it would be the other, it would have steered us possibly in another. At the moment, it is none of that. So there are even then a couple of steps to go through, which means, well, how do we determine whether we need more competition or not? How do we come to a conclusion on that? If we would come to the conclusion that there is a need for more competition, then there is the question, well, how will we actually do that? There are a number of ways of doing that. OECD has some recommendations on it, but this is still under discussion among the OECD member states. Also there is a whole variety of possibilities, which at least a theory I would foresee, which goes from continuous processes to step processes, and within the step processes, you know, do you do this once a year, once every 5 years? What we're looking for is to find a more longer term answer to a number of these questions, so that if, for example, there would be a decision — I'm not saying that this is the way I would foresee it to go necessarily, but if there would be a decision that yes, we need more competition, and yes, we would go for regular competitions for more GTLDs or for offers, we then need to design, well, how is that actually going to look? How is the first of those RFP, so to say, going to look like? And so I think we're still at the phase at all defining that and working through it, and I don't think we should jump too early to conclusions on some of these more detailed questions I just put on the table. I think it is important that we collectively go through the entirety of the considerations in a step-by-step mode, and that is actually what we will have to bring to paper, so that all of that thinking is in terms of process and options is in front of us, and we know what we are engaged in every of the next steps.
Bruce, I have a question for Paul.
Yeah, go ahead,
sir. Paul, you know, I think the concern that's on my mind, and I am the counselor who's raised this question about the PDP process now several times, I'm very cognizant of timeframes and deadlines and the fact that in the past far too many of them have been missed. And I'm concerned. I really appreciate your describing the strategy to council, but I'm concerned about council being too far away, perhaps at this point, from involvement in understanding the strategy and maybe even helping to contribute to elaborate on it in a productive way, so that we also then are prepared to develop the PDP in a timely manner and have integrated into our planning the ability to focus on the PDP at the appropriate time and with the appropriate input. It sounds like your thinking right now is that the strategy planning goes on really sort of relatively away from the this group. You take, the staff takes input from entities that they've designated as, quote, experts, and then an issues report and a set of questions would be presented to council. And it's sounding to me, time-wise, like we might not get that until well after September the 30th.
Well, that is the way, I must say, I'm currently looking at it. Our concern is to do exactly the opposite from, I think, what you're saying. Namely,
yeah.
Our concern is to make sure that we have the supporting organizations fully abreast and fully involved in this. The question is that with a number of these experts' advice, we need to take that material, turn that around into something which is presentable within our community as a whole, and then ask the questions like, do you agree with the OECD analysis and conclusions here, or do you see other elements, et cetera, et cetera. So it is exactly that what we need to do, you know. And we haven't got all that material together, so we don't, at this moment ourselves, don't quite oversee all of this. And we're still struggling ourselves to see how we would move forward on that, and there are some internal discussions taking place on this, and as soon as we come out with that, I'm sure that we are going to be in a position to inform the council in a more detailed fashion on how we see that.
Okay, maybe we could just talk about what your interpretation is of what it means to, quote, have a process implemented by the end of the year. I had been assuming that meant we had to have concluded a PDP and sent it to the board so that I can have a defined process, that the process was defined and agreed to. But are you perhaps interpreting that differently, and that we wouldn't have to conclude the PDP by the end of the year?
I think this is some of the internal thinking, and as I said, we need our general counsel to confirm that. If I give a more personal interpretation to this, my impression is that some of this was written under the deadlines with the text going with it was written under the assumption that there would be more detail. We need to design a selection process and the conditions, how it is actually going to be done. I think what we're currently looking at is an additional step which needs to be somehow inserted, namely, first of all, a decision: is there, yes or no, going to be a need for more GTLDs at this point in time? And I think we need to find some space to determine that, and to determine how we're going to measure, how we're going to come to either the one or the other conclusion, or whatever the conclusion may be. And as I said, we need to be very careful in giving ourselves the right questions in this context. And my sense is that this was not foreseen at the time. At the time, this was all drafted. It was sort of like, yes, there needs to be no GTLDs. We don't know exactly the procedure by which we're going to go do it, either, auctions or beauty contest or whatever it may be, and maybe some conditions on how many, but that is it. But the presumption was made, I think, to see, the presumption was made that there would be. And I think this is no longer necessarily a given. So I think we need to be a bit careful with it. So this is why we are considering to see whether we can interpret this predictable strategy in a slightly more wider sense than it was maybe originally foreseen.
Can I just ask a question on that, Paul? Is that then something that would be a subject to a dialogue between ICANN and the Department of Commerce?
Obviously, the Department of Commerce would need to agree with us.
Yes.
Yeah, may I speak, Bruce? Does it occur?
Yeah, go ahead.
One scenario might be, an illustrative scenario might be that as a result of the studies, the strategy that's adopted or the strategy that's recognized on September 30th might be that new TLDs, part of the new TLD strategy would be implementation of full IDN, so it would be IDN.
Yeah.
In that case, there's policy questions for the GN that implementation
right.
requires some policy questions to be answered by the GNSO and technical questions to be answered by other supporting communities, or committees rather, so that the implementation of that would necessarily be, okay, our strategy is to implement full IDNs. Let's commence implementation, and that implementation would have to be figuring out some of those technical and policy questions.
This is, that's very helpful, and that was going to be my follow-up question, Paul, to you and to Kurt, and that is, you know, given the intense interest around the world in IDNs and the challenges that we face there, I was going to ask, you know, how did the, and the limited resources of ICANN and the community, how did that fit in? Kurt, your answer was very helpful.
Yeah, also on that, I think, Marilyn, to add that obviously the results of the workshop we're organizing in KL is, mm-hmm. is going to provide further input to that. As you no doubt realize, part of the IDN complexity is that it is not only ICANN and its community that needs to do a number of things, but there are also other parties out there who need to do other things in order to make it work for the end user. Mm-hmm. So there is it is a broader complex of issues, and I think we are trying to kit out the KL workshop in such a way that some of this complexity is accessible to those who are not necessarily the experts in the field, but they have a clear understanding of some of the underlying issues there and some of the other entities who need to move forward on their responsibilities.
Question, Bruce. This is Ken Stubbs. If you don't mind me asking Paul Verhoef or someone from ICANN, are you planning on posting the actual agenda for the IDN workshop this week, or what's your timetable?
Ken, Paul here. I think we are, if Kurt is still on the call, he is a bit closer to Tina, so he probably knows a bit better what exactly the time schedule is on that.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, Tina is chairing the committee that's putting together the agenda. I don't know the precise timetable. I know they've met once. I know there is a draft agenda, and I think it might take another week or two before it's finally published. But I'll go back and see if we can publish, just like in the meetings, if we can publish a skeletal agenda, because that's been outlined, and then we can continue to flesh it out. I know, for example, there's a tutorial sponsored by ISOC that's going to be given by John Clemson and other people that'll occupy the first part of the agenda, and then there'll be a panel discussion of the presentation, the second part. But I'll publish a better schedule on that.
Harry, to speak.
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
I've been involved in a number of discussions about the IDN issue, broad-based, including the workshop in Kuala Lumpur with UNESCO, and we've been running under the assumption that the initial posting of a time slot for the workshop harbinged a rather rapid completion with the full agenda. And there are people you probably would want to have interest in this who are waiting with bated breath for the actual agenda.
I understand your message, Kerry. Thank you.
Okay. Any other items of business?
And do we have a firm time for the council board staff?
At the moment, it is scheduled for the Monday morning, the 19th of July. Is that correct, Glenn?
Yes, that's correct, Bruce.
7:30 to 9. Okay, thanks. I would like to say one with this workshop that is being planned, Teresa Swinehart and Steve Michelle and a number of representatives from different groups who planned the session at the last meeting are working together to try to plan a informational session for a WSIS update. That's still work in progress, including on when it might fit into the calendar, but I just want to mention it to counselors so they're aware of it.
Okay. Do you want to perhaps just send an email to the council list to summarize that as well, Marilyn?
I will.
Okay. If there's no other items of business, then I'll close the call. At this point, and thank everybody for attending.
Bruce, do we have another call before?
4KL.
This is Yang Lin.
Yep.
I would like to ask you if you are aware of the fact that the CGNSO is planning a brief acquaintance session during our meeting.
Yes, we did discuss that actually at the beginning of the meeting, Yong Li, and we're just trying to work on a mutual time to have that meeting. It's preliminary scheduled for 5 p.m. on Monday, but there may be some conflicts there, so we'll just update that over time. Your question, Marilyn, was whether the council was next going to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to pull up the relevant website. It's probably worthwhile us meeting, I think, before. It's a matter of seeing whether we've already got a date scheduled. If we haven't, I'll suggest one. Do you know, Glenn, have we got a date scheduled in July?
There's no date yet scheduled in July, Bruce, because it was taken that the council meeting in Kuala Lumpur would be the meeting. If you'd like to schedule a meeting, we can.
We have a lot of business, including on tour. Do you think we need a call of at least an hour to just make sure we're well prepared for it?
Yeah. Let me think on that, and I'll have a look at in what makes sense. I mean, ideally, it's probably just making sure that we've got some reports coming out of the task force. So I'm tempted to have a meeting in that week beginning the 12th, just so that we know where we're at in terms of the task forces and we can schedule any working group meetings, etc., that we need to in KL at that point. Earlier in that week.
If it were earlier in the week, yeah, so people would have time to conclude any work needed.
Yeah, so might aim for maybe even the Monday or the Tuesday of that week. Yeah, but I'll have a look and see what we can schedule for that. Okay, well, thank everybody for attending.
Thanks,
guys.
Thank you.